and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well, and I'm looking forward to talking to you today about how many people are starting to be on the same page that we need to address the climate crisis, but with using renewable energy. But now the question has become, how do we do it in a just and thoughtful way?
So I recently, with the advent of thoughtful federal politicians and more politicians recognizing the requirement that the country has to move to clean energy, it seems to me we've gone from a tier of questions as climate activists. We've gone from a tier of questions about how to convince people that renewable energies are good. And we're moving into a different kind of context now where we say, what is the best method for implementing clean energy technologies, right? What do we actually do? And what this new kind of discussion seems to me has the potential to pit allies against allies and people that have been working against some external problem begin to have questions because they're now trying to actually solve the next layer. I think one example of that is something that you and I have talked about in the past is the question of lithium extraction, right? I mean, can we get lithium for our electric vehicles, which begs all kinds of questions about, do we all deserve an electric vehicle? What's our transportation policy? All kinds of things where people who beforehand were in lockstep may all of a sudden start to wonder what's the right way to proceed. I think there's an article in the New York Times recently about cobalt in the Democratic Republic of Congo, right? Where, again, these are incredibly necessary minerals and damaging to extract. And the question is, is it right to go do that damage? Is there a net good? So that's one level of the kind of questions. Another, shall we say, manifestation of this new round of questions that I think is coming upon climate people is about where to put renewable energy facilities. Okay. And this is, let's assume for the moment that everyone is in good faith. Everyone is trying to do the right thing, right? Historically, in the United States, energy production facilities have been visited upon environmental justice, what are now called environmental justice communities, the places with less political power that can't resist the latest power plant that somebody wants to build, right? It gets put into some communities that don't have political power. Fine. Nowadays, there's lots of effort to put solar panels everywhere, right? You see them on the roof, you see them on people's roofs, you see them on the highway here in Massachusetts. They're all strung along the Mass Pike as you go in Route 90. But a lot of those solar panels, and in fact, in my hometown, there are several solar panel facilities. They're all out in what used to be cow fields, right? Plunked on green grass, stuck into the ground. What used to be a big meadow is now covered with these metallic photovoltaic cells. There's an article in the Yale E360, which is this magazine from Yale University. The title of the magazine is Why. The title of the article that we want to talk about is Why Putting Solar Canopies on Parking Lots is a Smart Green Move. This article just popped up in the last few days, basically making the case that, yeah, instead of putting solar panels on a green field in quotation marks and taking away farmland or someplace, we should be putting these solar panels on parking lots at the shopping mall. Right, Mariah, did you see that article?
I mean, yeah.
What did you take out of it?
I mean, it certainly at first blush seems like a no-brainer, right? Yeah, of course you put. I mean, it keeps the cars shaded, so you're also sort of providing a service for the cars. One of the examples the article uses is a Walmart Supercenter where you have this 5-acre parking lot, which is basically wasteland. There's not, you don't have insects or birds or, you know, critters, mice, voles making homes underneath the parking lot. Maybe there's voles under the parking lot, but probably not many. You know, so it's a wasteland anyway. Why not use it for solar panels? People might even, they make the argument, people might even shop longer at the Walmart Supercenter if they know their car is being charged while they're under the solar panel. And then you don't have to deal with the, you know, hot asphalt parking lot that you have to cross to get to the store and all these great things. So it certainly lays out a good case for why it would make sense to put solar panels over a parking lot. And also, of course, there's great solar exposure in a parking lot.
Right. And I think the arguments that the author suggests as to why it is, why the obviously good thing has not happened, is because it's more expensive. It's much cheaper to go to a big field, run your tractor over it, stick in the solar panels, than it is to build safe structures that will hold the solar panels, which are not particularly light, right, up in the air.
Yeah.
And also to have them distributed in lots of little relatively small places around the community to sort of aggregate and keep track of all that stuff. It just costs more money. And that's been the one of the leading reasons that this this sort of planning hasn't happened as much, right?
Coupled with the you know, a lot of entrenched interests that are blocking any sort of support that the government might turn toward getting these kinds of things put up.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an example. I think I saw it in the article, but somewhere, of a solar. So get this. It's a solar panel array that runs along the middle of a highway in Korea. But underneath the solar panels and maybe a 10-foot wide range, there is a bike path. So now you can pedal your bicycle along the middle of the highway with solar panels overhead. And like that is touted as a good use of otherwise wasted land, right?
Mm, right. Nice and shady too for your bike trip.
Of course, I'm not sure I'd want to be pedaling down the middle of a highway breathing in right. Your car exhaust and whatnot. But if they're all electric, maybe that's a different circumstance.
That's true.
But I mean, I guess the, so at first blush, it seems as if this is a wise thing. And it comes to a head sort of in Massachusetts recently. Down on the south coast of Massachusetts, there is a community that is opposing a solar panel in a greenfield setting, because in order to build a solar panel, they would have to dig up all of the nice topsoil in this cranberry bog down near Cape Cod and stick in these metals, these poles that God knows what would leach off those poles, right?
Yeah, they're wooden poles that are coated in chemicals, right?
These are weather treated wood that's got the arsenic pushed into it. And these people are saying they don't want that. They like solar panels, but this is not the place to do it. And as I say, at first blush, I think that's a reasonable argument. There's no sense digging up green spaces to put solar panels in. But the complaint that I have about this article and the whole concept is that it then, by saying that we must protect the green spaces, it then makes more vulnerable the communities that are already overburdened, the places that are already, in quotation marks, wastelands. Right here in Massachusetts, the site of the Weymouth compressor. I mean, the governor of Massachusetts went so far as to look at the property and say, "Well, this Weymouth is not exactly virgin territory, so therefore, putting a compressor plant is a good thing." That's just not, to my mind, an acceptable way. And so, I think the idea that we would then build solar panels in already industrialized places, because it's cheap, you know, it's already destroyed, doesn't set well with me. And I'm not sure particularly. I mean, I think that just needs to be recognized as a risk, right?
Yeah. And I mean, I think the third sort of fold of that is that if everywhere is not the right place for solar panels, what energy source does that leave us with? Are we just back to fossil fuels? Because, you know, then you're stuck with like, okay, so we keep using fossil fuels, and it doesn't matter how much of the cranberry bogs and the, you know, ecosystems we've protected, because the climate will change so much that all the cranberry bogs will dry up and all of the ecosystems will lose their biodiversity anyway, right? So at some point you have to say, we just need to get renewable energy going in a really major way, any way that we can. And I, that's not to say that I don't think we need to be very thoughtful and careful about how we move forward. But we've got to get away from fossil fuels.
Yeah. I mean, and I think there's legitimate equities all around. And I'm not, I mean, in terms of the place I made reference to down in the Cape, I'm not saying that there's some trade-off there, but that's just a single case of an interesting opposition to greenfield installation of solar panels. But generally speaking, climate activists need to begin to think about how these decisions are made. And I would say that certainly in Massachusetts, there are new rules around what is defined as an environmental justice community. And part of the goal of an environmental justice community, these rulings, is to involve the communities in meaningful ways, right, through appropriate language translations and have the discussion to really explain to people what might happen, so that there is sort of consent and agreement. And I would say that, just again, this is me talking off the top of my head, I think that we should be more fairly distributing these renewable resources to all different towns. I mean, everybody should get one, from the most well-to-do community to the least well-to-do community. And if the most well-to-do communities have objections about environmental stuff, those need to be fixed. And I don't think they should be driving arsenic posts into the ground anywhere, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what it does is it raises the quality of the installation of the photovoltaic thing, right? You got to think about it more and be more careful as to where you're going to put it, if everyone understands and everyone is fairly sharing in the I don't know what the right word is, the distribution of that energy. No?
Yeah, I think it's important to, I mean, I definitely think it's important to engage stakeholders in when you're trying to make these kinds of decisions. And you often can find that talking to the communities and the neighborhoods and getting their input brings you to a better place anyway. You know, I mean, I don't know exactly what the with those poles that had the arsenic on them, they found a solution for it. They have new poles. I don't know what the new poles are, but they have new poles that don't have arsenic on them, right? So, and involving the community is really important to get good ideas and different ideas and new ideas, and to sort of, sometimes you do have to force the hand of governments, businesses, and say, look, yes, it might be a little bit more expensive, but the payoffs of spending that extra money to get the non-arsenic treated poles is worth it in the long run, because you have a more thriving cranberry bog, and it helps out the economy in the long run or whatever. So, you know, I think there's a delicate balance between making sure we do move forward swiftly and productively on renewable energy in a thoughtful way, but also making sure we're engaging stakeholders and taking their sort of needs and desires into consideration.
So I guess, dear listener, I think where we are, what we're saying is that we're making progress as climate activists, right? We've moved away from these questions of should we build a wind turbine to legitimate good faith discussions about where they ought to go. And we recognize there are paths to try to do this in a just and thoughtful way, so that everyone is heard and that nobody gets gets screwed in the end, right? I mean, that this is done properly, because we're looking to but I think there will be hard trade-offs, right? And requires thought and listening and care on the part of everybody involved. All right. What we'll do is I'll put up links to these different articles. Again, it's thought-provoking. to people should read, catch up, see what they think, and formulate an opinion, because these questions aren't going away, hopefully, right? If we pass the Build Back Better Act, we'll be building lots and lots of wind turbines and solar panels and stuff like that. So I'll put those things in the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have a question about the show, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what we should be talking about. Of course, you're probably listening to the show on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Spotify or iHeartRadio or all these different podcast apps. We're on essentially all of them. Please ask your friends to listen to us on their favorite podcast distribution app. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. I want to close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects environmental justice communities. So, Mariah, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Always fun.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.